From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I hope you guys are having a great day. This is one of our favorite segments of the night because we get to look back on all the other shows, find out what they were talking about, and then we just get to dig into it a little bit. It's also just a good chance to hang out. It's kind of like a roundtable panel type of a chat.
Sort of like the McLaughlin group.
But fun. Yeah, exactly. It's like McLaughlin group, but fun. For our younger listeners, that's a, what was that, like kind of a Beltway political talk show?
Yeah, in the 90s, my dad watched it on PBS all
the time. Yeah, it's a little quite a dated reference. All right, let's get to it. Let's just get to the news roundup. But before we get to the news roundup, first we're going to play this trivia clip. This is one of the, I love this movie. My wife loves this movie. We watch this together. This comes from a movie that I could watch once a year and never get tired of it. It's just like, it's excellently done. It is excellent on every level. So I'm going to play you the clip from it really fast. And then Matt, take a guess. You can let me know what your thoughts are.
Look at that cookie. Did you really think that this group of women was going to finish that cookie? I never got a chance to try that cookie. Ooh, delicious.
Do you recognize that?
I do not.
That is from Bridesmaids.
Oh, and I've seen that. Yes.
Yeah, do you remember she's at like the, at that point, I think she's at the bridal shower for her best friend, which is now being thrown by somebody else, like her arch rival. Such a funny premise for a movie. And it's so, I mean, it wasn't even the first movie that was about bridesmaids.
No.
There was other ones.
But that one just stuck.
But that was the one that just was done so perfectly. I think it was written by Kristen Wiig and Annie Mamolo, I think. I could be mispronouncing her last name. But they are like writing partners and just best buddies from forever. And they wrote this amazing script, which then just turned into this. Like, I remember when that movie came out, my wife and I went and saw it. And it was just one of those movies where you just go like, wow, all of these characters are so fully formed. They're all so hilarious. They're super, super funny. Men love that movie. Women love that movie, obviously. And the other, do you remember the other breakout character was Melissa McCarthy?
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah.
She had really only been known, like my wife, when we saw Bridesmaids, my wife knew Melissa McCarthy as Suki on, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the name of the show now. People are going to text me the answer in just 2 seconds. It's with Laura something and blah, blah, blah. And they're in a little tiny town. Gilmore Girls. That's it. Gilmore Girls.
Okay.
Thank you. So it's on Gilmore Girls. And she plays like a very nice character on it, but she's not funny. I mean, she's funny in a way, but the show is not about her.
Right. It's not comedic. She's in her portrayal.
And I think she's supposed to be kind of wacky, you know? She's supposed to be like a quirky side character, but she's drop dead hilarious in this movie.
And that was the first movie I was aware of her too. Yeah. That's the first time I knew of
her. For anybody who wasn't a Gilmore Girls fan,
Most guys.
That's the first time we saw her. And she was just so funny in that movie. And then, of course, she's gone on to have, you know, massive success. The other cool thing is that she and her husband are a team. I don't know if you knew that. But Melissa McCarthy, all the movies that she acts in, I mean, not every movie. She does do movies where her husband is not the director. But I think the majority of the movies that she acts in, her husband's name is, I think his name is Ben Falcone. And they were, you know, they've obviously been, you know, married for a long time. He is in the industry as well, but she has this amazing breakout success. And then they were able to work it into the different deals that he's going to direct a bunch of these movies. And they do now, and they've been doing it for years. And so they're like, you know, it reminds me of like Lucy and Ricky Ricardo.
George Burns and Gracie.
There you go. Yeah.
Exactly.
Man, our references are so old, aren't they?
How old are we?
No, we're young. We just like, we have a great understanding.
A deep knowledge of pop culture.
Cinematic, pop culture, television history. All right, let's get to it. On the Seattle's Morning News, Mike Salk from 710 Seattle Sports, he was sharing his feelings about the upcoming Mariners season. Let's hear about this.
What are you feeling about the team at this
point? I have no idea. I don't know, man. I give up. Honestly, on the on this topic, I am ready to punt. Last year, I really felt like they had made some of the, you know, decisions to get themselves over the top, but more importantly, that the young players, the nucleus, were going to grow in such a way that it was going to take them farther than they'd been before. It didn't work. Obviously, it was a, you know, total, well, it wasn't a total mess, but the prediction was wrong. People seem to have this narrative about last year that the Mariners went like 60 and 102. They didn't. They won 88 games, whatever it was, and missed the playoffs by one or two. I mean, like, they were a good team. They just, you know, weren't quite as good as they needed to be last year. have the moves they've made push them over the top? Look, I think they're of roughly similar talent to what they were last year. Maybe slightly better, maybe slightly worse. A lot of injury questions. But if Julio has a better year than he did last year, they'll be great. If Ty France had a better year than he did last year, they'll be great. If one or two of the new guys plays better than a few of the guys did last year that they brought in, they'll be in great shape. They have one of the best pitching staffs in baseball and one of the better bullpens, hopefully, in baseball if they can stay healthy. If they can do that, they should be in good shape. Are they going to win 102 games? Probably not. Can they win more than 88? Absolutely possible. So we'll see.
Are you a baseball fan?
I am. In fact, baseball was the one sport as a kid that, you know, I was actually really good at.
Oh, nice.
I was really good at baseball, and it was the simplest for me to understand, too.
Yeah.
I remember watching the World Series with my dad when Atlanta was in it. Like, baseball, yeah, it's one of my favorite sports.
Do you watch a bunch of it now? Is that something
that you
still watch?
I do. You know, when I moved to Seattle, like, I got to watch the Mariners.
Yeah.
And I was so crushed last season because you can make the playoffs. You can make a play. No, not to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, but it's really nice. Actually, that's a really great way, especially because you are not from here locally.
Not from here,
you were born in, Oklahoma?
Southern Mississippi.
Southern Mississippi. Okay, sorry.
Traveled a lot for radio.
Yes. So you were born in Mississippi, yeah. And then you move here. And the thing is, like, it is really a great way to get tied into the local community and to start following the local sports teams. I grew up such a massive baseball fan. It was all I cared about as a kid. I played it like it was a religion.
Yeah.
I was playing all day, every day, like very Sandlot-y too. Like my friends and I would just go to there was an old baseball field, just like the Sandlot, actually.
Okay.
Through the woods in the house that I grew up at.
Mm.
On the other side of the woods, like down a ravine, across a river, up the other side, as you would come out of these woods, there was this old baseball field from the school that's still there. My parents still live on the same property that I grew up on. And so as kids, we would make that daily trek, just like the Sandlot,
yeah.
Through the backyard, go up to the baseball field, and then you just like play Sandlot ball all day. Yep. And it was such a fun experience as a kid to like have that place. And nobody played on that field, so we felt like we owned it.
Yeah.
And my favorite movie as a kid was Sandlot, so I just love baseball. But it's funny because I was actually like just the other day, I was driving into work and I was thinking about baseball, which is odd. I don't know why I was thinking about baseball, but I was thinking about baseball because I have, you know, soon to be four sons. I have three sons right now. My wife will have our fourth son in about 2 months. We play baseball and the kids play baseball. I've coached their team and coached their teams, but we don't go to a ton of games.
Right.
Because it's kind of a hassle.
Yeah.
And I'm realizing as a parent, like how much my parents actually extended themselves to take me
to
as many ball games.
You have to park, you have to deal with the crowd.
It's super expensive. It's like, I don't know if maybe attention span on kids was greater when we were younger. I think it actually was.
Yeah.
And kids these days, I just don't know if my kids would sit for an entire baseball game.
Well, it's scientific. Attention spans have declined.
Yeah. And baseball requires an attention span.
Oh, yeah. Especially
it's not,
extra innings.
And it's not as entertaining as other sports, but there's something that's slow and interesting about it.
I like the rhythm of it.
And it's the atmosphere. And it's like sitting in the ballpark. And so like, and also my kids are just getting to the age now where I think I could probably take them to a ball game.
Right.
They'd understand what's going on at a ball game. And I think they would enjoy the experience, you know, because it's everything. It's like getting the hot dog and it's getting the, you know, it's getting the souvenir little bat and all the stuff that they hand out.
The entire experience at the ballpark.
All that stuff. So I love the idea of baseball. I just haven't been super into it recently because, you know, the Mariners haven't really been a very good team for like two decades. They just only recently started kind of like striving for things again. So I'm hoping that the Mariners...
I became a fan at the right time, hopefully.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So I'm hoping that they get better and I'm hoping that I care about them more. I just don't know if I'll ever care about them as much as I did when I was a 12-year-old kid.
It's hard to recapture that spirit.
It's hard to care about almost anything as much as you do when you're 12.
Yeah.
You know, when you're 12 and you just have like certain passions.
Yep.
Like I heard a phrase once that like the friends you make, and I actually think it was in... It was in Stand By Me.
Yeah.
And I think it's Richard Dreyfuss's character. You know, he's the narrator of the movie. And I think he says, I'm paraphrasing here, but he says something like, you know, the friend, because you remember, he's remembering that story in Stand By Me. And he's saying, the friends you make at 12, you'll never make friends again like the friends that you make at 12 years old. You just can't. It's impossible because they're kind of your entire world.
Right.
You know, and your world is very small.
Yes.
And you don't have your own family yet. And so, like, it's the friends you make.
And the bigger your world gets, the more it seems like some things are lost.
Totally. Totally. So maybe baseball fits into that category. I don't know. It's kind of a tangent. All right. Let's move along. Gian Ursula, a recent food pop-up. Talking about barbecue, people waiting in line for hours. Is there any foods that you wait for? Let's hear about it, then we can discuss.
G, would you wait 4 hours for some barbecue?
No.
What?
not at all. I mean,
would you wait 4 hours for anything?
No.
Wow.
Not even to hang out with former President Barack Obama. I wouldn't wait 4 hours.
Okay, that's ridiculous. Why? You wouldn't wait?
Really? I'm not waiting 4 hours unless I can go. You know what's the best? You know what the best thing in the world is? Is when you call something, some type of customer service, and they're like, hey, give us, you know, please press 1 so you can save your spot in the queue and we will call you back. 1. And so you call me back. Now, if I get to see President Obama or whatever it is I'm waiting for, I get to wait at home until I can just show up after my 4 hours. That's great. And also, let me just say this. This barbecue is the best and this barbecue tastes the best and this pop-up barbecue, it's all so subjective. It all comes down to is the sauce or the non-sauce or the seasoning or the smoke.
It's the meats. It's how you cook the meats.
Okay, Arby's. I mean, look,
you know what? I think he's right there. There is this thing that happens when people want to wait in lines. If I see a really big line for something, instantly I don't like that thing.
Yeah.
I don't care how good it might be. If everyone is waiting in line, my initial thought about that place. Actually, I make a personal character judgment about those people.
Yeah,
and I just go, idiots.
Yeah, yeah.
Why are you waiting? There are some people though who just like to wait in line.
Yeah.
They just like to be a part of a line. Yeah. I don't know what culture that is, but I don't like it.
Well, we saw it with the Taylor Swift concert. They were getting there so early, and it was like a commune, a community where everybody's like, you know, showing off their merch and just hanging out. It was a big deal to them.
I guess that's part of the experience. At least with the Taylor Swift concert, you're getting 3 hours of entertainment.
Right.
Like you're waiting, and then you're getting something. If we're just talking about food.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I'm having to factor that in now. In my head, I would factor that into the cost of the food. So like I go to whatever this barbecue place is. If it takes 4 hours to wait in line. Now I'm factoring it. All right, what's an hour of my time worth? And then add that onto the price of the food. Is it really worth it? Short answer is no.
Plus, it skews the valuation because then you get to it if you wait that long and you're so hungry, you can't fairly judge the food because you're starving. So it's going to be the best food you've had.
That's true because you're so bought into this idea.
Yes.
You want it.
You're invested.
You are willing it to be the best barbecue
sunk
you've ever
cost,
had.
Yes.
Have you ever waited in line for something for a long time for whatever?
I don't think so. I wasn't concert going age when there was that whole camp out in line for tickets thing.
Yeah.
So I've never done that.
I was for movies and I guess this is kind of a young person's game. Any older person who I just don't have the time to wait 4 hours.
Your kids wouldn't wait. It's bad enough when you take the ferry.
Could you imagine my wife? Yeah. If I took the ferry, I wait in line for ferries. That's true. But my wife would be furious if she knew that I was waiting in line, like wasting 4 hours for a hot dog or something stupid. But I did, you know, like it's a young man's game. It's a young person's game to wait in long lines because you can just kill time.
Now, if I were to meet Springsteen or McCartney, maybe you could convince me.
Sure. Yeah. If it's like a once in a lifetime thing.
But not for food.
Barbecue. No, thank you. I waited one time. I was a really big fan of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
The movies.
Yep.
I loved them. I still love them. They're fantastic.
Great.
So the final Lord of the Rings movie, Return of the King, when it came out, I went with my friends to the midnight showing, which was a blast.
Yeah.
It was like super fun back in the days when people still went to the movie theater. And we go to the midnight showing and we're waiting there for like, I think we got in line like 6 hours ahead of time,
wow,
which is too long to wait. Like it's too long. But it was the experience. And maybe that's what people are going for here. Like they like having an experience.
Plus you had friends. It was communal.
Yes. And we were inside. We could go to the bath. It was like inside the theater because we were like the very first, you know, within
the
first
50 people. It wasn't like you're standing out in the hot sun.
Yeah. No, we're kind of an air-conditioned place. We're sitting on the ground. We're talking about, you know, oh, how does the Twin Towers relate to the book? And all these like dork things because I love Lord of the Rings. And so that was actually a really good line waiting experience. And then I'll never forget. This is a quick side note, but I'll never forget. I go into the movie theater. I'm already feeling like a real dork, but I don't care. My friends and I, we sit down. we find the like optimum, you know, viewing distance from the screen. And there's like a whole science behind that. And as, you know, people who waited 6 hours, like clearly we had a very specific angle we wanted to find. So we sit down in our seats. And then, and this is so phenomenal that these guys did this. In Lord of the Rings, you know the elves?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you know how the elves have like long, flowing, beautiful hair, and they have like really cool cloaks, and they have like everything about the elves is cool. So, and anybody listening, if you go, don't know what I'm talking about, just stick with us for a minute. We'll get off this in a second. But we're sitting in the movie theater, and the row in front of us is like empty, totally empty. And in walks, and you might know this if you've seen the movies, but the elves are like, they do things in unison. So like they'll walk like perfectly in unit in line. They're very good at marching, and everything is done perfectly in unison. So this group of about, I don't know, it must have been 9, 15, 9, 10, 12, whatever it was, big group. They walk into the aisle. They're all dressed identically as elves, and they all stand in front of their seats. And I'm sitting there. My like my, you know, when did Return of the King come out? Probably 2003, 2004. My 18, 19, whatever year it was, my brain is just exploding because I'm watching all these elves, and they look great costumes, like definitely cosplay type costumes. They walk in. They're standing in these, they stand in front of their seats, and then in unison, without saying a word, which means they practice this, which extra props for them for doing this, they all sit down in unison, which if you've seen the movie, they do stuff like that. Yeah. And my friends and I are sitting there, we're like just loving that they just did this. And like everybody in the theater starts clapping because it was just this like stupid little thing that they did.
But it was an event.
It made it, we were all so happy that they did. It was ridiculous.
That's awesome.
Way, way cooler than it should have been. But yeah, so I guess waiting in line sometimes. I've come full circle.
But
waiting in line
for
some things, just not for food. That's dumb. All right, Jack and Spike. Governor Inslee finally does something we can all agree on. Let's hear about this one.
Washington Governor Jay Inslee signs a bill into law adding protections against artificially fabricated fake intimate images. Yesterday we were talking about this. I said it should be federal law that if you take somebody else's likeness and use it to make, let us just say, adult images, that that should be bad.
Oh, yeah.
And so for as much grief as Jay Inslee gets, for as much as it is deserved, this is a very, very good law, and I think that we should all celebrate the fact that HB 1999 is now law in the state of Washington. It protects children, it protects minors, it protects people who don't want their image used in pornographic images.
Everybody, you bet.
And I think that that's just great. Now, there will be certain people out there that go, Jack, you can't praise Inslee for anything. Inslee's worse. And to them, I would say, congratulations on that worldview. I don't have it personally, but if you...
that
if
makes you better, sleep better at night, then you have that.
That makes you sleep better. I mean, if Donald Trump passed a bill into law that was like the Clean Water and Air Act, and you know, I'd say that's great. Well, that's wonderful. Isn't that so great? I mean, the problem that people have is that because we're so reactive as a society, that even when somebody does something right that they don't like, they find a reason to not like it. This is a very common thing that happens with people.
You know, I feel very confident saying that I like I like deepfake laws.
Yes.
I think deepfakes are scary. I've seen some
very
amazing ones online.
Yeah.
And you're just like, how is this not the real person?
Yeah.
And that's where we're going. Just
it's
where somebody can type in the AI and they can do it.
It's scary to think that no matter how much you consider yourself protective of your privacy, that someone could just use your image in a way that embarrassed or worse.
Yeah.
The way they manipulated your image.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible. All right. Well, that's all we have time for. We don't even have time to get to the other one. I think we're going to use that one tomorrow because it's a really good one. John and Sherry have a great question, and you're just going to have to stick around for tomorrow's show. So 24 hours and 18 minutes from now, we will play that clip. All right. We got a lot more coming up on the show. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. We are getting closer and closer and closer to Easter. And PETA has reached out to the White House. They've asked them to do something. And I'm going to tell you about that in just a second. But do you guys love Easter as much as I do? It's a fantastic holiday. Obviously, you know, I'm religious, and so it means something extra special in my family. But my kids love it because they get chocolate in the morning. Do you guys, what was your tradition when you guys were little kids? Do you guys have Easter traditions like I did? basically what my family did in the mornings is that we would have, like, there'd be little, you know, my parents got super into it. It was really fun. I'm super glad they did, because now we get super into it with our kids, like probably more than we should. It's probably more candy centric for them than we should. I think they're probably wondering why. I mean, if I had to guess, could my kids actually tell the Easter story, or would it be like kind of a convoluted explanation of how bunnies are saving our souls and why they deliver chocolate? I don't know. It's confused. I'm going to ask that question to my kids and find out what they know. And I'm going to gauge how big my Easter response is this year based on that, based on their description of what the Easter holiday represents. Because if they get it too wrong, then maybe we need to pull back on the chocolate and the Easter bunnies a little bit. But I don't know. We're enjoying it right now. But every morning when I was a kid, I mean, Easter morning when I was a kid, and now I do this with my kids too. We, you know, the night before, the parents decorate and do all that kind of stuff. But we cut out like bunny feet, like out of paper and stuff. And we'll spread them around the house. And so like the kids kind of follow the bunny trail. And again, I always thought that it was just some clever marketing thing. Now, there's actually a history to the bunny and Easter, which is fascinating. I'll get into that in just a second. Let's get back to PETA. So PETA has officially asked the White House to get rid of Easter eggs at the annual Easter egg roll. Can you believe it? Oh, PETA done something like this. I can't believe it. PETA President Ingrid Newkirk sent a letter to Joe Biden, who hosts the annual Easter egg roll every single year. And she said, here's what the letter says. Just pretend you're the White House and pretend that you're getting this letter. What's your response to something like this? This is from PETA President Newkirk. And I don't know what the PETA President sounds like. That's a tongue twister. I don't know what the PETA President sounds like, so I'll just read it in my voice. But you can imagine, like, you know, whatever voice you want. I'm writing on behalf of the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, that's PETA, the world's largest animal rights organization with more than 5 million members and supporters in the U.S., to respectfully suggest an appealing, that's a hint to what PETA's going to ask here in just a second, an appealing way to modernize the White House Easter egg roll. They go on to say, one that would be truly inclusive and welcomed by every tot, again, that's another clue, who doesn't eat eggs for religious, cultural, or environmental reasons, or because they object to the way that the animals, including hens, whose reproductive systems are exploited for eggs, are raised and killed these days. I eat a lot of eggs. PETA would probably want to send a letter like this to my house. We eat a lot of eggs in the Skorheim house. Big time. We buy the big Costco egg bins, and I cannot believe how many eggs we go through in my house. It's unbelievable. The letter continues. Instead of promoting the deleterious factory farming and slaughter industries, will you please initiate the annual White House potato roll? Do you guys think that's a good idea, replacing Easter eggs with potatoes? That's what they're suggesting. They said Easter is not a time of renewal or joy for chickens on egg factory farms. It can take up to 36 hours in typically hellish conditions for a hen who spends her entire life in a cage smaller than a letter-sized sheet of paper to produce just one of the thousands of eggs slated to be used at the White House Easter egg roll. They continue on talking about all the bad things. But they say the potatoes, they think it would just be great if potatoes became the new eggs. Now, I don't think the White House is going to do a potato roll. It's not the same thing. I just don't think they're going to do it. But listen to this. I was fascinated by this. I didn't know this. I thought Easter eggs were just something they invented in the 60s, and that's what people did. But no, the history of the Easter egg hunt goes way, way back. This is from EnglishHeritage.org, who taught me a little something that I didn't know. The custom of the Easter egg hunt, however, it comes from Germany. Some suggest that its origins date all the way back to the late 16th century when the Protestant reformer Martin Luther organized egg hunts for his congregation. The men would hide the eggs for the women and the children to find. This was a nod to the story of the resurrection, in which the empty tomb was discovered by women. In the German Lutheran tradition, the Easter egg hunt is linked to the Easter bunny, or the Easter hare, as he was originally known. The first written reference to the Easter hare was in 1682 by George Frank von Frankenau. How's that for a name? George Frank von Frankenau. In an essay about Easter eggs. However, links between hares and rabbits and Easter go back even earlier in Central Europe. Hares were associated with fertility. We all know that. You know, they say something like bunnies. Obviously, they have a lot of cute bunnies. And with the Virgin Mary, and sometimes appear in the paintings of the Virgin and Christ Child, and also in illuminated manuscripts. Custom had it that the hare would bring a basket of brightly painted eggs for all the children who had been good, and that these would be hidden around the house and garden for the children to find. That's the obviously the modern tradition that we all get today. Like, an interesting thing about those bunny Easter eggs. Have you guys seen those commercials? One, the history here. That's very cool. I really like that we now know the history. So I hope you can take those Jake's nuggets. That's what I call these little bits of history that I like to tell you guys. Things that I didn't know that I then like get to share with you guys. These are Jake's nuggets, which is not a good name. I understand that, but I can't come up with a better one. So there it is. Back to the egg, back to the Easter egg, specifically the Cadbury egg. Do you guys like the Cadbury egg? It's the kind of thing that when I was a kid, and I don't know why I had this association with it, but my wife and I were talking about this the other day. We saw a commercial because obviously it's Easter season. People are advertising for Easter candy, and they played that Easter commercial that they've been playing since I was a kid, and it is the Cadbury Easter egg commercial, and it's like all those different animals trying out to be the Cadbury Easter egg. I'm sorry, the Cadbury bunny. And it's like, you know, there's like a, I think there's a goat with some bunny ears. There might be a dog or a cat or something like that. I think there might be a pig. Then there's a lion with bunny ears and he's, you know, raw. He's roaring. But obviously nobody can replace the Easter egg bunny. But back to the Cadbury eggs, I don't know why this is the association I have with those eggs, but I always thought that those were the like fanciest thing you could possibly get on Easter. Would be a Cadbury Easter egg. And I don't know why I had that thought, but I was talking about it with my wife and she was like, I thought the same thing. So it's just like just brilliant marketing that everybody was thinking that these are like the creme de la creme, which is kind of a pun, I guess, actually, because those eggs were full of like this liquidy cream. And you could actually, the coolest part about those eggs is that you could break them open. They're chocolate, obviously. And then the inside of the egg is also some sort of a soft, gooey chocolate confection. I don't know what it is, but it looks like an egg yolk, but it's sweet and it's sugary. And I'm not a fan of the taste. I actually don't think it tastes that great. But still, as a candy, it's pretty great. But I don't know. Maybe you guys thought of it differently. But for me, the Cadbury Easter egg, it was the Rolls Royce of Easter candy. And I don't know why, but my wife had the same idea. So just good marketing there. All right. That's the Easter story that I had for you. I don't know what the White House is going to do. I have not heard news that they're going to replace Easter eggs with potatoes, as PETA would like them to do, but I doubt they're going to do that. All right, we got a lot more coming up. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show. We really do appreciate it. And I say that a lot. Boy, do I seriously mean it. You guys are choosing to spend your time with us, whether it's live, which is fantastic. We love that you're listening to us right now. Or maybe you're one of those folks who like to listen later on. And maybe you're one of those folks who like to, you know, download the podcast, which we certainly do appreciate. Or you're listening on a smart speaker in your house. All of these are different ways that you can listen to us. The possibilities are endless. That's not true. They're actually probably endless. There probably is an end to the different ways that you can listen to us. But we just appreciate that you are listening. It's great. We love it. But download the podcast if you get a chance. Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim. Look it up wherever you get your fancy podcast. It's on Spotify. It's on Apple. Listen to it there. Also, give us a rating. I don't know who reads those, but other people that I hear ask for ratings. They ask for good ratings. And if you like us, give us 100 stars. Like, is that how many? I don't know how many ratings are giving. I don't know if it's a star system. Or give us 3 thumbs up. Whatever it is, rate us highest as you could possibly rate us. On the Spinal Tap scale, we would prefer that you rate us an 11. That's what we want. All right. I saw the story. I was interested in this because I have kids. I know how expensive childcare is. My wife and I actually made the decision for our family that when we started having kids, that she would stay home, This is what she wanted to do. She was very excited about this, to be a stay-at-home mom, to work in the house, taking care of our kids. It is a full-time job. It's really, really tough. But it's very, very expensive also to have somebody else take care of your kids. So there's a trade-off. It's like, how much money are you going to spend paying somebody else to take care of your kids, or are you just going to stay home with your kids? So is one of the two of you going to stay home to take care of your kids, assuming you live in a household that has two parents? I know not everybody does, but my house does. So that's what I'm assuming here. All right, so this is interesting. So the government is stepping in and saying, listen, we want to fix childcare. Vice President Kamala Harris sent this out to her followers on X, formerly known as Twitter. She said this. She says, make no mistake, President Joe Biden and I intend to cap childcare costs at $10 a day for the average family and make preschool free for all four-year-olds. To do that, we need Congress to act. So I'm assuming they're going to need funding for this, for something. But this is interesting to me, the idea of capping childcare costs at $10 a day. I know anecdotally from friends who have they put their kids in childcare. It's a lot. And when we looked into it before we decided that for us, the best solution was that my wife would be a stay-at-home mom and to take care of the kids, which is, again, full-time job. We looked into the cost. It's very, very expensive. And we also pay for, I have a kid in preschool. All my kids have gone through preschool, and preschool costs money, and we have spent a lot, thousands and thousands of dollars on preschool for all my three kids. Now, I have a fourth kid coming up. We're going to have to spend some more on preschool. I understand that, and that's fine. Whatever. But they're saying they're going to cap child care costs. That's their intention, at least. President Joe Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, cap child care costs at $10 a day. So for all of those daycare facilities out there, how is this going to work? Somebody broke this down and did the math, and I thought this was fascinating. Let's do the math on that. Let's assume that you run a daycare, and let's assume that you are able to take care of 20 children in your facility, which sounds pretty average to me. I don't know. Maybe the number's higher. Maybe it's lower. And then let's assume that under this new plan, that you are only able to get $10 per kid per day. So that's $200 a day if every single one of those kids is there every day of the week that you're open. Now, we know as parents that kids are not showing up to school every single day, because we also know as parents that your kids are sick all the time. During the school year, they're just walking into a stew of sickness. That's what school is. That's where kids build up their tolerance for sickness and the germs, things that they're going to need to fight for the rest of their life. They're building those things up when they're in school. So you're getting sick a lot as kids, because guess what? Kids are not great at washing their hands. All right, so, but let's assume in this magical reality somewhere, every single one of those 20 kids in your facility is coming every single day to your facility. So that's $200 a day. That's $1,000 a week. 4 weeks in a month, that's $4,000 a month. Again, assuming every kid is there all day without fail. So here's a question for you. How do you pay your employees? If you have two employees who are making $15 an hour, which is $5 less than the average, than the minimum wage in Seattle, they'd be making $1,200 a week. So right away, you're already in the hole. That's $200 less than what you're bringing in. So how does that work? Then you're going to have to step into situations where the government is subsidizing these childcare places. And once subsidizing comes in, then they can charge a lot more money. We see this on college campuses all the time. College is way too expensive. And why is it so expensive? Well, it's expensive for a lot of reasons. One of the reasons is a huge chunk of the college education is subsidized. And they don't care where the money comes from. And if they don't care where the money comes from, why not charge a lot? So is this going to make it cheaper for childcare? I don't know. Is it going to make it more expensive? Is it going to make it more difficult for people to get? I don't know. We'll have to see if they're successful doing this. It doesn't sound like a super great idea to me. But, I guess it remains to be seen. We will see. All right, we got a lot more coming up on the show. Stick around. We got the third hour. It's going to be the funnest hour, I promise. That's going to be coming up here next on Cairo Nights.